Well, ladies and gentlemen, let us begin. I want to welcome all of you this afternoon to this symposium, International Studies in the American Research University, The Path Ahead. This is a symposium, as you all know, to mark the 50th anniversary of the Mario Einaudi Center for International Studies. Time for celebration, to say the least. My name is Fred Logevall. I am a member of the faculty in the history department here and also the director of the center. And I'm just honored to be here with you. I want to extend a special welcome to distinguished guests from other universities and institutions who will be speaking to us this afternoon, as you know, if you've had a chance to see your program. And I'm just delighted to have them with us. I want to welcome Cornell's senior academic leadership, including, of course, President David Skorton, who I will introduce in a moment. I want to also welcome current and former program directors. I see you scattered about the room, as well as former directors of the Einaudi Center, and of course, extend a special welcome to students, to staff, to other faculty. Also, we have representatives here from international student organizations. And I want to point out to you that we have impressive displays outside in the foyer. I hope you'll get a chance to look over what they have produced. It's just terrific to have them here with us. What we want to try to do over these 2 days as part of this symposium is to celebrate the Einaudi Center's achievements, to reflect on the changing role of international studies in the American university, the research university, and of course to consider how best to chart a course for the future, especially here at our fine institution. 50 years ago this fall, 50 years ago in September, upon the recommendation of the Cornell University Faculty Committee on International Affairs, the Center for International Studies came into existence, 50 years ago, with a mandate, quote, to facilitate and encourage research and teaching activities dealing with international affairs, unquote. Professor Mario Einaudi, a member of the government department at Cornell, was appointed the first director, and of course, the center was renamed in his honor in 1991, and then here we are today, 20 years after that, a major anniversary to say the least. Here's the structure of the symposium. This afternoon, we will have five presentations by distinguished guests, followed by a presentation by yours truly on the Einaudi Center at 50, some of my reflections on where we are and where we might be going. We'll then have four panels, starting with one this afternoon, addressing a range of issues related to internationalization here at Cornell, in particular, and those will continue tomorrow morning and early afternoon. Again, of course, this is all in your booklet, in your program. The final panel tomorrow is a look ahead at Cornell, what we might be doing from here based on what we've learned from these 2 days. And I also want to draw your attention to our annual reception, which we will be hosting tomorrow in this room starting at 5 p.m. We will have good food, we will have good drink, we'll have live jazz from the Paul Merrill Trio. It's going to be a terrific time. I hope you can join us. Finally, before I introduce President Skorton, two exciting announcements. The first, please switch off your cell phones, as they can interfere with the sound system, and because it's the right thing to do. The second announcement, however, really is exciting. I'm very pleased to announce today the creation of an Einaudi Center postdoctoral fellowship program in global affairs with a likely emphasis, some of this is still to be determined, on security studies broadly conceived. The timing, I think, is right for such a program, which, of course, is the argument that I made to the donor. Thanks to the tremendous generosity of the Bartels family, that is to say the donor, we're now in a position to make this happen. We'll have more information on the postdoc program in the coming weeks, but beginning with the fall semester of 2013, if all goes as planned, we will have two postdoctoral fellows in place in Urus Hall, each of whom will teach an undergraduate class and be a central part of the intellectual life of the center. I'm honored to introduce David Skorton. David J. Skorton became Cornell University's 12th president on July the 1st, 2006. He holds faculty appointments as a professor in the Department of Medicine and Pediatrics at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City and in biomedical engineering at the College of Engineering here on the Cornell campus. He is a member and past chair of the Business Higher Education Forum, a life member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and a member of the board of the Association of American Medical Colleges. He is also co-chair of the Africa-U.S. Higher Education Initiative of the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. Formerly president of the University of Iowa, President Skorton is a board-certified cardiologist and a master of the American College of Cardiology. He was elected to the Institute of Medicine in 2010 and became a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences earlier this year, a very great distinction. Most important of all, David Skorton possesses an encyclopedic knowledge of American jazz. Do you want to know where on the Upper West Side you should go for the best live jazz on a weeknight? You want to know about the best live Bill Evans recording? Our president is your man. Ladies and gentlemen, here to talk about, quote, bringing Cornell to the world and the world to Cornell, I give you David J. Skorton.
Thanks very much, Fred. For those of you who aren't from around here, when Fred talked about finding the best live jazz on the Upper West Side, he meant the Upper West Side of Ithaca. And there's not a lot of choices, but more than you'd think. Fred, I want to start by congratulating you for putting together this symposium with your colleagues, for your very, very able and more than able leadership at the Anoudi Center, and for bringing us to this day. Thank you, Fred Logaval. I'm very, very honored to be playing any part at all in this symposium, let alone giving brief lead-off remarks. And I more than hope, I actually expect that the conversations between today and tomorrow evening will actually contribute to the future direction of internationalization at Cornell. And I congratulate you on top of everything else, Fred, in carefully arranging that closing session to take advantage of the dialogue for the 36 hours. I think it's terrific. Beyond Fred, I'm grateful to all the faculty, staff, and students associated with the Anoudi Center for organizing this symposium, and to our distinguished visitors, Craig Calhoun, who's president of the Social Science Research Council, Barbara Hill, senior associate for internationalization at the American Council on Education, Stephen Hansen, who's vice provost for international affairs and director of the Reeves Center for International Studies at the College of William and Mary, and Don Feiler, Associate Secretary and Director of International Affairs at Yale. We're all looking forward to learning a lot from you in the hours and day to come. I also wanted to take a moment to introduce what I hope are the two senior academic leaders in this area to whom Fred referred. I think they came in. Kent Fox, are you here? Provost of Cornell University. Kent, thank you very much. And. Is Alice Pell here? And will she be recognized? Alice, thank you. Alice is a Vice Provost for International Relations, so I thank everyone for joining us. As you know, a half century ago, the Anoudi Center was created to be a coordinating hub for international studies programs at Cornell, and over the years, its mission has really broadened and deepened and developed to include numerous programs that really provide much of the foundation of our international efforts at Cornell, and to create its own interdisciplinary initiatives For example, the international relations minor, and now this new Bartels announcement that's so exciting. We also should credit the Bartels for the World Affairs Lecture, and we should also credit Einaudi with the Foreign Policy Distinguished Speaker Series, who have brought, I know, Dalai Lama, Fareed Zakaria, Vaclav Havel, and others in recent years. In a different direction, the center also provides grants directly to advanced faculty research and also sponsors outreach to the K-12 schools. Very, very important and admirable activity, on which I also congratulate you, Fred. So stimulating and supporting and coordinating Cornell's many and varied programs, really the Einaudi Center is a very vibrant and essential part of the university, and it's a thrill to be celebrating the 50th anniversary. Cornell University has been international in scope and in aspiration really from its very beginning. International students enrolled in our very earliest classes in the 1920s, some 55 years after Cornell was established. The Cornell-Nanjing Crop Improvement Program began and began a tradition of international engagement in a broad variety of fields. And over the years, the programs expanded it to many more countries and many more academic areas. And while Cornell Medical College, to which Fred referred to earlier, although not on this campus, has also placed a growing emphasis on global health and outreach, as I'll get back to in a few minutes. Cornell excels, to our visitors, forgive me for a moment of pride, Cornell excels in both international studies, which I define as understanding the world and its people, and in international engagement, by which I mean utilizing education, research, and academic partnerships to affect positive change in the world. And I'm very proud of the international programs and tremendous respect and admiration for my colleagues on the faculty, staff, and in the student body who have advanced our international efforts and continue to do so. Now, as you may know, since 1865, when we began, many other colleges and universities, both in the U.S. and abroad, have come to share our passion for international activities. They realize, as Cornell and its faculty have long realized, that if we are to educate our students for global citizenship, we must offer them language study, an understanding of history and cultures beyond their own, and meaningful international experiences. We must equip them and ourselves to live and work in a world whose chief problems do and have always transcended national boundaries. As the world of university-based international studies and engagement changes, however, this university, Cornell, must respond decisively and in a forward-looking manner, lest we risk being left behind. Without a clear and strategic vision of its international role, Cornell faculty, students, and staff risk becoming less relevant globally at just the time when so many problems that don't recognize borders require international collaboration. And today I offer a sort of a verbal op-ed, some personal reflections on internationalization nationally and at Cornell, including a call for a new university-wide planning process, as well as a call for a few immediate actions that I don't believe require any further planning. So please see this as my personal commentary. Please don't blame Fred for anything I say. If there are some things that resonate especially strongly, I'd prefer to take the credit for those rather than give it to Fred. Well, let's start by looking at some trends in internationalization in U.S. Universities. Although there's obviously a growing recognition, perhaps we could go so far as to say universal recognition, that internationalization is important in every aspect of higher education, it's a very, very challenging time for institutions of higher education in this country to expand their efforts, especially public universities. Resources have obviously declined very substantially with a global economy, and federal and state governments have retreated, and I don't think that's too strong a word, from funding education in general, and have retreated specifically from programs such as the National Resource Centers, Fulbright Hayes programs, and others. On many campuses, language programs have suffered cuts, sometimes deep cuts, And of course, after 9/11, many borders became more difficult to cross. Despite such challenges and despite the financial austerity of the recession, internationalization initiatives, including the number of international branch campuses established by U.S. and other universities, have increased very substantially in recent years. Nearly 80% of international campuses, about half of which, only half of which, are from the United States, have opened in the last decade. And Cornell has been in the forefront of establishing international campuses. We're in our 11th year running the only American medical school to give an MD overseas in Doha, Qatar. Although this particular campus is very successful by any measure, and Cornell is frequently approached about the possibility of considering opening other campuses, my first editorial comment will be that I do not believe it's in the near-term interest of this institution to establish more complete campuses, at least in the next few years. U.S. student participation in international experiences, whether one calls it study abroad or something else, has more than doubled over the last decade when 80% of these branch campuses have opened. Cornell honestly lags other institutions in this regard, as I will mention in a few minutes. Another trend is toward joint and or dual degree programs with institutions abroad, and these are now fairly common. The Council of Graduate Schools reports that as of 2008, 38% of graduate schools in the U.S., it's probably more now, had at least one joint or dual degree program with international universities, and this was up from 29% the previous year. And interestingly, 31% of others were planning to start one in the subsequent 2 years, which takes us not quite up to the minute. Both joint and dual degree programs, of course, have advantages and very significant challenges, especially joint degree programs take enormous meeting of the minds, spirit, and aspirations between faculties of different institutions. I believe that any changes in Cornell's offerings of dual or joint degrees should not come from me or even from the provosts, but come from the faculty themselves and should reflect the capacity of the faculties involved and, most importantly, their long-term commitment and interest. In terms of the presence of international students on campus, Cornell always was and clearly remains to be a standout institution nationally. Today, the Institute of International Education released the Open Doors Report, and based on fall 2010 data, places us continuing to be among the top schools in the top 25. That is based on just the absolute number of international students. And I'm delighted that all of our students can benefit from the experience of living and learning with students from other countries. Currently on this campus, on the Ithaca campus of Cornell University, where about 60% of our faculty are and the vast majority of our students, we have over 3,800 international students, about 18% of our total enrollment, and this is our highest percentage in a decade. International students at this institution account for about 9% of the undergraduates, 24% of professional students, and 42% of our graduate students, and in some graduate programs, as you can imagine, more. They represent, these students, more than 120 countries, and at this particular time, China, South Korea, Canada, and India, and Singapore are the five most common countries of origin. The numbers of students from specific countries and regions fluctuate for a wide variety of reasons, many of which many of you understand better than I. Most obviously, we've had a dramatic increase in the number of East Asian and South Asian students at this university and in this country in the last several years. But on this campus, and in general, availability of undergraduate student financial aid is always an issue, and it's an increasingly difficult issue with the recession. Now, amidst this very good news about the presence of international students, and by the way, scholars on this campus, there are reasons for concern at Cornell. Among our area studies programs, the numbers of our federally funded NRC's Title VI centers has declined somewhat over the last few years. As in all other fields on this campus, we have lost a significant number of faculty in international studies and international engagement, and of course, more retirements are on the horizon, as all of us in higher education throughout the world are expecting a big wave of retirements in the next few years. Also, another reason of concern that I mentioned earlier and I want to drill down on a little bit is that with only 27% of our students, undergraduates, earning credit for international experience during their Cornell undergraduate careers, we fall behind at least 40 doctoral institutions in the U.S., and 14 of which have participation rates of 50% or more. So I'm going to give my personal editorial version of the looking forward part of the speech now, and I'll be very interested with some trepidation to see how this lines up with your and Chris Barrett and Alice Pell and other august figures' views at the end of the day tomorrow. First, I think we at Cornell must place increasing focus and emphasis on recognizing the importance and planning for the future of international studies and international engagement at Cornell. We have to do this at both our main campuses, and we have to do this particular thing from the top of the university. Now, virtually all of us who grew up in faculty ranks have an aversion to things that are top-down in academia, but deciding that we do need to do some planning is one of those things that once in a while comes around. I believe we need to expedite broad, but at the same time focused university-wide discussion and planning led by our faculty and by faculty appointed jointly by the provosts on our two campuses. The long-term approach to internationalization in this university, I believe, should be faculty-led and faculty-oriented, and I have already asked the provosts of both the Ithaca campus, Kent Fox, and the incoming provost of Medical Affairs and Dean of Weill Cornell Medical College, Lori Glimcher, jointly to name a faculty committee soon in consultation with the outgoing provost in New York City, Tony Gatto. I hope to charge this committee by the end of this academic year to report back to the university community, and to make that clear, I hope their report will be back to us by the end of the spring semester. Meantime, while the faculty-led process is defining the direction of this university in international affairs, I believe there are a handful of actions that cannot await the faculty planning, and asking that we move forward with these actions post-haste. Now, first I want to state that I fully support departmental and collegiate authority in a decentralized hiring process, but I believe in the situation facing the number of retirements that we have already faced and that we will surely face, I believe in this particular situation our provosts, our chief academic leaders, should play a larger than usual role in the hiring process, and I call on the provost today to work with the deans on this campus and with the department heads on the Weill Cornell campus in New York City to work with the normal system to identify strategic enabling areas and to recruit faculty into these areas. Number two, I think we should immediately begin to work toward the goal of a meaningful international experience for at least half of our undergraduates during their time at Cornell. I understand that this is only one mechanism for preparing global citizens, but it is one. And in terms of other mechanisms, of course, we need to continue to emphasize, as we do at Cornell, the study of languages, cultures, history across the undergraduate curriculum. Number three, we will do our best to focus in a careful way more resources on need-based financial aid for international students. Very difficult money to come by. Through our current philanthropic campaign, we've been able to identify, with guidance from Vice Provost Pell and Provost Fox and others, some funds that have come in to help support need-based scholarships for students from certain parts of the world, but we need to redouble our efforts in this regard. Fourth, I believe it's time to establish a formal international advisory board to Cornell that will include alumni, of course, representatives of the diplomatic and development communities outside of Cornell, and the private sector and academics from outside these walls to provide guidance to leaders like Dr. Logoval and Dr. Pell on the design, implementation, and assessment of Cornell's international programs. Now, lest you wonder where will the resources come from to do these immediate actions, We will provide some seed resources very soon. I have talked with the provosts who will work with the deans on the Ithaca campus to allocate additional funds for these priorities. And with guidance from Provost Fox, I will contribute from a modest but useful discretionary pool that the president of the university has. And we will increase the goals for fundraising immediately relevant to internationalization in our current philanthropic campaign. And I've already so communicated to Vice President for Alumni Affairs and Development, Charles Flager. As we move forward together, making essential changes on a quick timeline while also taking time for a thorough faculty-led analysis of our international priorities, I want to reiterate my pride in all of Cornell's accomplishments and my personal commitment to enhancing and expanding international studies and international engagement at this university. However, these are words from me with some actions to back them up, but it's you, the faculty, staff, students, and our colleagues at campuses away from here who have changed countless lives for the better and will continue to do so through your studies and through your engagement. You have expanded cross-cultural understanding throughout the world and helped to prepare our students for contributions to an interconnected world. I'm very proud to work with you in bringing Cornell to the world and the world to Cornell. Thank you. And we have time for questions about anything I brought up or comments, guidance. And we would have time for a little discussion about jazz places, either in Ithaca or New York, if you like. Please.
As you know, most branches of major research university in the United States overseas are in super rich countries, such as Qatar or United Arab Emirates and so on. Now that's fine, and you know the reason for that more than I do. But this, I'm concerned about major, large countries, poor countries, such as Bangladesh or Tanzania. Can Cornell willing to make commitment, whatever money Cornell making beyond the expenses to run, say, Qatar campus, that money should be reinvested in such countries that need really much help?
It's a very fair question. Let me just share with you, I'm sure you realize it, but just for everyone, if people haven't thought about this, there's really three models for this international engagement that involves institutions. I'm not counting for a moment the most robust engagement, which is faculty to faculty, which, you know, thank goodness doesn't require presidential proclamation, if you can imagine such a thing. There's three models that I know about. One model is to have an agreement for a partnership of some sort that does not require establishment of a degree program, but formalizes interactions across a field or an area of fields beyond the work of individual faculty. And we're all engaged around the world in very many of those. To the extent that that those begin to work in that direction, it's helpful to the point that you're making, but it's usually incidental to the research and education that underlies it. A second model is to set up a complete campus somewhere in the world. And although I have enormous respect and have visited many times our campus in Doha, that's a model that immediately brings education to the locale. And in the case of a medical school, also brings service to the country in the form of medical care, you know, that's performed by the faculty in the medical school. It does not necessarily improve the higher education offerings of the country itself. I mean, it depends on how it's done. A third model, which I believe is very important, is to work at the lead, at the direction of faculty colleagues or education leaders in the country in question, and to develop a partnership that will not require a campus, but a partnership that will fulfill the need identified by the partners in that country. I'll make this more concrete in a moment. That way, it has the three attributes that I think are the most important. it is directed, at least in great part, by people who live in that country, who understand its problems. And if it's a higher education issue like faculty development, as opposed to, you know, direct action on the ground, that faculty development will be led along the direction chosen by the higher education establishment in the country. That's one. A second thing that it does is immediately bring some additional expertise to the country, although, as I say, at the request of the of local leaders. And thirdly, sometimes a degree from the institution, or perhaps from both institutions. So one single example that I was thrilled to have a chance to witness is a program that we have with Bahar Dar University in Ethiopia, which is a Master's of Professional Studies in Integrated Watershed Management, in which the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Cornell has developed a partnership with Bahar Dar University. And I had the honor the first year of conferring the degrees of 19, as I recall, MPS. And I actually think in terms of leverage for dollars spent, that third model may have a more direct effect on the capacity to deliver higher education and solve problems in the country. But there's no doubt that sometimes a campus is a very good idea. And my answer right now, my thought right now, after a lot of discussion with Provost Fox and others, reflects my own belief that perhaps it's not the most efficient way to increase capacity in the country, and also looking at our resources right now at Cornell University and trying to focus the resources on faculty development, student financial aid, and things like seed resources for Einaudi. But you make a very, 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 very important point. Thank you.
I'm Tamara Luce. I'm the director of the Southeast Asia Program, and I'm very grateful to hear more about your plans for internationalization. Especially, you know, one of the things that I heard you say a couple times was this emphasis on languages and history and culture. So I'm wondering about the sort of board discussion, the planning boards that you're creating. I couldn't tell if there was one or two. There's a formal international advisory board that has a certain group of people, and then there's this other board that you're thinking of having faculty on. And I noticed that you said that the faculty would be appointed by the provosts. And I'm wondering if there's any room in there for faculty to join who are not being appointed. And in particular, I'm just sort of worried that the humanities would be squeezed out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very important questions. Let me repeat the gist of it, if I may paraphrase. The request is for some clarity in how many committees of what kind I'm thinking of appointing, and secondly, to understand what the boundary conditions are, if I can use that term, on who goes on the faculty planning committee, and whether we will think broadly about the disciplines on campus, especially the humanities. So, first of all, the outside advisory board is just that, advisory, and take advantage of our many alumni out in the world, as the colleges themselves do at Cornell, where we have advisory councils of various kinds for the colleges. Such an advisory board would allow not only the deans and department heads and directors of distinguished programs like SEAP and others, but the provost himself to gain wisdom from outside, but it's advisory. The faculty is not an advisory board, it's a planning committee. And I got that idea, as I get many good ideas, by following Provost Kent's leadership when he established the Strategic Planning Committee for the university's strategic plan. And as I think you know, and others may in the room know, that was a faculty-only committee. There were no people on it with enormous titles like Provost Fox or me. I think my title is more impressive, but he also has an impressive title. It was all faculty, as I recall, 7 from Ithaca and 1 from New York City. And our strategic plan was written by that faculty group. So the idea would be that this group would develop a plan, which, of course, we would ask that they vet with others and accept criticism and so on. But I'm really asking the provost to take the leadership in naming the faculty. I imagine after this announcement today, people will lobby the provost. I welcome them to do that. His email is WKF3. And I personally checked. He's an electrical engineer. He has enormous capacity in his inbox. There's no problem with many faculty. I think that how the faculty committees will run consultation on campus and how they'll reach out, I think is something we should all discuss together. But if the way Provost Fox did the strategic plan for the university is any example, there'll be very, very substantial possibilities for input. On the third question, which is very important, of course, the humanities and the fine arts, to some extent, the humanities and the social sciences will figure very, very large in these disciplines, as they have to in the fields that we're talking about. The trick these days, here and everywhere, is to find a way to balance the resources necessary with the aspirations and planning. And one of the things that I know the provosts and I will ask this faculty group to do is to take a deep breath and make some choices about focus in the programs. And we have some programs, such as the one you direct, which have been traditionally the very best in their field. And there may be others where we think that some more emphasis could lead them to the level of distinction that you and your colleagues have achieved and those who came before you. So I hope that answers it. And further questions, write me, seriously, write directly to me, david.scorton, complaints, WKF3. Thank you. Questions? You want to throw me off now?
No, just for your sake, maybe one more.
Maybe one more, yeah. Yeah, please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Narma Todd, as well as NGR.
Yes.
My name is Gender Sexuality Studies.
Wonderful to see you.
Thank you. My question really, since I came on this campus about 40 years ago, I've been hearing about internationalization. And the issue is not only tapping on the resources outside of Cornell abroad or the international student, but really tapping on the resources of the heritage, faculty, students, and staff. And you know what I mean by heritage, those who come from international background.
Yes.
Because I see, especially with student organizations, they are mostly neglected. And I know many cases that I don't need to address now. But particularly when we only talk about diversity with regard to ethnicity and race, and not talk about other modes of diversity. And I really need for those who are responsible to rethink this issue. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I, first of all, it's good to see you, as always. Secondly, it's a very, very important issue. If you have a minute and you don't mind doing it, write me something a little tiny bit about this that I can share with both Provost Fox and Provost Glimcher and Gatto in New York City, because it is a very, very important issue. And we have an abundance of riches on the campus in that regard. So you've talked to me a bit about this in the past. Write to me again, and I'll take care of forwarding. You don't have to remember WKF3, just David.Scorton. Before I leave, just permit me one more time to congratulate Fred and colleagues in getting to this amazing milestone. I used to think 50 years was a big deal. It doesn't seem like such a big deal to me right now. But for you young people, 50 years is a very long time. And I congratulate you. Hope you have a fabulous conference. Thanks so much, Fred.